Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh, it's my jam. It's my jam. Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. Bellator 279 UFC Vegas 52 preview show starts now!
Also, Bellator 278.
Oh, man. We're missing the big one, too, because we have ourselves quite the weekend in the world of combat sports and MMA, in boxing, and we have a lot to talk about on another live preview show here on the MMA Fighting YouTube page. Thank you for joining us live, or if you're watching after the fact in video mode or on the podcast network, that's where you're checking us out. We appreciate it very much. Hope everyone's having a wonderful Friday. I am Mike Heck. Man, do we have a freaking crew and a half here today. Joining me, we have Jose Youngs, recent BTL winner, the People's winner on yesterday's program. We have Alexander Kaylee, the Prince of Positivity. There he is.
Poll.
There's probably a poll up there. We will get to the poll momentarily. And we have Mr. No Gray Area himself, Jed Meshew, joining us as well. Gentlemen, we have a lot happening over the next 48 hours or so. We're going to be focusing more on tomorrow's festivities, UFC Vegas 52, Bellator 279, Celtics basketball, some Tyson Fury, Dillian White chatter. AK loves the Celtics chatter. Before we get into this, AK, what is the poll? What is the poll? Let's get the poll out of the way.
Very obvious. What events are you most excited about this weekend? UFC Vegas 52. I kind of unfairly to the other promotions put Bellator 278 and 279 together, but I do feel like it is kind of a two-event extravaganza. And, of course, Tyson Fury versus Dillian White. So that is the poll for now. A lot of early returns. Not even worth mentioning. Huh?
KSW 69, man. Come on.
I mean, that's obviously number one, so why even put in the poll?
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
There we go. Jed, I want to kick this off with you because by 11 floppity jillion country miles, Tyson Fury, Dillian White is the biggest fight of the weekend. It's not even close. It's not a discussion. It's not a debate. But focusing on the duo of MMA events tomorrow, the UFC card versus the Bellator card, which event are you more interested in and why?
I mean, I guess it's Bellator 279. The UFC fight night it's better than last week. So there's that. It's got that going for it. But frankly, the fight I was probably the most interested in this whole weekend, the Sumeredge Manel Kopp, that's no longer there. So I don't get to watch Manel Kopp do hyper-violent stuff. And so now I'm kind of bummed, and it puts a bad patina on the whole UFC card. So it's there's just not a lot that I'm like, I will always watch a Jessica Andrade fight. She's the second best flyweight in the world. She's coming back to strawweight, where she's one of the top three strawweights in the world. So I'll always go watch her do the damn thing. But give me Chris Cyborg in a squash match. Give me Juan Archuleta Halvian Stotts is a banger. And Kyoji Horiguchi Patchy Mix is also probably a banger. Like, and, you know, you get Lemelay McFarlane. Sure, it's against Justine Kish, but, like, the card tomorrow for Bellator is a much better card, I think, certainly from the top sections. You know, when you get down to the bottom, gets a little thin on the ground at some of those prelims, but up at the top, I think it's no question better.
AK, what say you? Or if you're only watching one of these events and you can't find out anything that goes on with the other one for like 2 weeks, which one are you watching?
I actually really, really like the UFC main card. I don't know if it was last week brought up or some other show. We kind of like, listen, we're in a bit of a slump here as far as like stacked fight nights go, which isn't to say the fight nights have been bad, but certainly on paper, I can understand this bit of malaise on the part of the media, on the part of the fans. The cards are a little soft. We just did a bit of a roundtable, Jed and I, along with, of course, Steve Morocco and Damon Martin. So people can find that at MMAFighting.com. Kind of asking everyone, is there a point where you feel like you would turn out, or tune out, or you feel like fans will start tuning out in droves with the kind of the watering down of cards? The watering down is nothing new. Ever since, you could probably point to Fox, ever since, of course, they had to go to free TV and start churning out more cards for major networks. I mean, it's been an issue. Cards have been watered down. Oversaturation has become part of MMA. I mean, that we understand this. But it just seems like lately, or like every weekend, except for like maybe 6 or 7 weekends out of the year, we're getting weak main cards, weak main events. But I like this main card. I think it's got competitive fights. I think it's got name value. Clay Guida, Claudio Puelles, for me, just passes the bare minimum to actually be called a co-main event. And as Jed mentioned, Jessica Andrade, I think one of the best women's fighters of all time. So I'm always excited to see her fight. And Limoges is a legitimate contender, so that's exciting. And there's some other sneaky fights in there. Lana Venata, Charles Jourdain is a good one. But like the Bellator card, as you get down to the prelims, it's a little... It could be stronger. It could be stronger. I would advise people tune into the main card if you are a discerning UFC viewer. But I'll say overall, I don't think it's quite as down as people think it is. Or perhaps my standards have just lowered.
Jose, where are you at with this? I know the Chris Cyborg, Arlene Blanco main event you like because you like seeing the greats do great things no matter who they are doing great things again. So... is that enough to put the Bellator card as a whole over the top of the UFC card as a whole? Like top to bottom, which card do you like better?
Top to bottom, it's probably better Bellator 279 only because they have like the two Bantamweight Grand Prix. And then let's not forget, they were originally supposed to have Sergio Pettis, Rufián Stotts, like teammate versus former teammate title fight in the first round of that Grand Prix. That fight was awesome until Sergio had to fall out. And then, oh, boo-hoo, we get freaking Juan Archuleta in instead, another great banger of a Bantamweight. So the main card is obviously better, but in terms of competitiveness, I think Andrade Lemos is going to be way more competitive than Chris Cyborg versus Arlene, simply because we've seen what happens when Chris fights Arlene, and it's not good for Arlene or pretty much any other Bellator featherweight. And then like adding guys like Kai Kamaki and Yancy Medeiros and all those guys on the prelims, I think that just kind of tips it in the edge. But so main card, top to bottom, Bellator's better, but the main event of the UFC, I feel, is going to be more competitive. And I think it's more interesting because Lemos is coming off that quote-unquote win that a lot of people think wasn't a win over Angela Hill. So if she gets past Jessica Andrade, she's probably like one win away from a title shot. And then if Jessica Andrade wins, I mean, who doesn't want to see a third fight with Rose? So title implications added to it. I think the main event is more interesting, but the whole card is better for Bellator.
All right, so we'll talk about Bellator in a moment. I feel like there's more meat on that bone, so we'll probably spend a little more time on that Bellator card. But let's start with the UFC card, UFC Vegas 52. We'll start at the 115-pound headliner between the former champion Jessica Andrade takes on Amanda Lemos. Andrade, always a tough out, just an ultra-violent fighter, super fun to watch. Lemos has won 5 straight since moving from bantamweight to strawweight, coming off a controversial win over Angela Hill in her most recent outing. But this is a big opportunity for Amanda Lemos, AK. And while we have two women with high rankings, with numbers next to their names, of course, and the only rankings that matter, the MMA Fighting Global rankings, Andrade is the number 2 flyweight, could very well be the number 2 strawweight as well come next month. And she's taking on the number 9 strawweight in MMA Fighting's global rankings and Amanda Lemos. So Jose was talking about potential title implications. And I love to see these highly ranked fighters closing the show, but do you feel like this one like has that sizzle, that those title implication stakes to it? Because I don't know. This one kind of doesn't feel that way because we have the title fight coming up. I feel like Marina Rodriguez is there kind of waiting for the winner. What are these two women fighting for? Like, what are the actual stakes in this fight?
I think it's definitely missing that title contender immediacy, and that's okay. That's okay. I've said many times in the show, not every main event needs to be about, is this put them one away from a title fight? Does this, guarantee, is this a number one contender's bout? It's nice if it is. For Lamoche, it certainly could be. She's a fresh challenger. The UFC, of course, is always looking for fresh challengers. She would be winning six straight fights, I think. I know the Angela Hill, pretty competitive fight, close split decision, maybe raise more questions than gave answers as far as how legitimate she is as a contender. But I think she'll learn from that too. So I don't think that was necessarily a bad experience for her at all. So, like I said, I'm in agreement. I'd be very surprised if either fighter made enough of a statement to say, UFC's got to give them the next title fight. But Lamoche is, it's weird to say she's closer because like we said, Andrade is probably, the only reason she was removed from the strawweight rankings is just because she went up to fight at flyweight. If we're talking about where should she be ranked at 115, if we never took her out, she's what, just below Rose and Zhang Weili, right? Joanna would be removed. I mean, so Joanna wouldn't be on the list now. So she's third or fourth at worst. This person who's top five in two divisions. And yet, because she's already competed for the flyweight title, she's already been a strawweight champion and has been in multiple strawweight champ fights, the freshness of Lamoche makes her closer, I think, in the eyes of the fans, in the eyes of the matchmakers. I don't know if that's fair, but she has a lot, Amanda Lamoche, that is, has a lot to gain here from a win. Andrade, of course, wants to win and keep her name in that circle, but it does feel like she has more to go just because... we've seen her before. We've seen her in world title fights before. So the stakes are like medium to high for both fighters and slightly higher for Amanda Lamoche. And for me, that makes this a worthy main event. Again, nothing needs to be guaranteed and nothing is guaranteed in the UFC.
Jed, do you agree with that? Do you feel like Lamoche is closer to a title shot or do you feel like Andrade is closer?
I think they are in the exact same spot. Whereas a win here, in my books, a win should give him a title fight. Like, sure, Marina Rodriguez, like, not here to downplay her run. Her run has been almost exclusively decisions and of varying widths, basically. And depending on what happens in the upcoming title fight, like, I know that technically Rose Namajunas got her revenge on Jessica Andrade. She sure didn't. She definitely didn't win that fight. And if that fight was five instead of three, she probably gets colded again because Andrade was coming on like a bat out of hell in that third round. So if Jessica Andrade goes out here and does what I expect, I frankly would hope that she would get the next title fight. Maybe she doesn't. But I also don't think Marina Rodriguez is like pulling big numbers. Like I think it's entirely viable that if Andrade comes out here and blows the doors off Lamoche, that she and Rose wins, that they just run a trilogy because – who is going to complain on behalf of Marina Rodriguez? Are people going to be up in arms about it? They're not. Everyone knows Andrade more and, frankly, probably deserves it more. And similarly, if Lamoche comes out here and surprises the hell out of me and, like, takes it to Andrade, I think that is probably – like, it will depend. If she wins, like, a bad split decision the same way that she, did over Angela Hill, then maybe not. But if she goes out here and just puts boots to her – then that's more impressive than all of Rodriguez's run to me, even if Lamoche probably should have lost to Angela Hill and hasn't really fought anybody on that level before. That one win would be enough for me to say, yeah, that woman probably deserves it more. Let's give it to her. So I think the outcome is that they both an impressive win for either woman puts them really in the driver's seat. I think they, if they come out, either of them impresses and then says something saucy on the mic, they might be able to make, cut right in front of Marina Rodriguez, but we'll see. I mean, I guess that's what we're going to find out. I just don't feel like Rodriguez is, I don't think anyone will care is just sort of where I stand. Like, I haven't heard the outpouring of fans saying, yes, Marina, this is her time. Let's go. It's like, yeah, she's got a good win streak. She probably deserves it. No one's going to bat an eye if Andrade takes it from her, though.
Jose, if you're Marina Rodriguez, Are you concerned here? Or are you looking at this fight like in a certain way? Like, would you prefer one fighter to win over the other? I mean, I know you kind of look at things that you need to see the fights play out and how they play out and how the fight ends and stuff like that. Like decisions weigh a certain way, finishes obviously weigh a little bit more. But if you're Rodriguez, are you a fan of one fighter over the other here?
I think it would depend on that, on this fight. And then, of course, the big fight in the big rematch in June between Zhang Weili and Ioannis Jędrzejczyk, which I think no one even mentioned, is another high-level strawweight fight coming up, three rounds for whatever reason. So if Jessica Andrade wins, she would, I assume, want revenge from either of those losses, especially Zhang Weili, the one that, you know, like cleaned her clock in Beijing, or I think it was Beijing, the fight in China that once, like when she lost her title. So maybe she, even if she does win, I don't know if they'll slot her into a title fight, because even Rose has kind of mentioned Marina, and Rose seems to kind of, you know, want to fight these girls that are deserving of the title shot.
Like, don't want to get that ass beat again.
So like, remember like when Carla, everyone said Carla should get the title shot, and then Daniel was like, maybe. And then Rose was like, no, it's going to be Carla. Like Rose has already said, like Marina's like, yeah, she's in there too. So if the champion wants her, then why not? But let's see how it plays out. Because, like, let's not forget, 10 of 11 people thought Amanda Lemos lost her last fight. That's obviously not going to help her in the eyes of the UFC. On the flip side, Marina Rodriguez stepped in on real short notice to save a main event one time. You know how the UFC likes to scratch your back if you scratch there. So she's obviously, Marina's in the good graces of the UFC. So I assume she's going to be a big Jessica Andrade fan, just because if Amanda Lemos wins, it's new blood. And even if Amanda Lemos does win, just do Amanda Lemos versus Marina Rodriguez, because Rose, you know, seems to fight like, wants to fight like once or like twice a year, maybe not three, four times a year like some fighters do. So if Rose takes another long gap, why not just slot Amanda Lemos and Marina Rodriguez in another main event for the actual number one contender fight?
All right, let's get into picks. AK, we will begin with you here. Who gets their hand raised to end the festivities at the iconic Apex tomorrow night?
This is so tough for me, because I think, like I said before, I think that tough fight with Angela Hill was a really good thing for Amanda Lemos. A fight, by the way, which I thought Lemos won. There's a rival review at mayfighting.com. Guys, check that out. But Jose mentioned that most of the media, I think 10 out of 11 and 9 out of 10 on MMA decisions, scored the fight for Angela Hill, I think, if I'm not mistaken. But man, it's just she was before that Hill fight. I mean, people were, you know, were already anointing her as, oh, Amanda Lemos is running through people, she's number one. And then she fought, of course, a super tough veteran, and unsurprisingly was tested and taken to a decision, and a contentious decision. But I do think she learns from that. Has she learned enough to get over the challenge of a Jessica Andrade? I'm not willing to say that yet, because like I said, I still think Jessica Andrade is in her prime. When your only losses are like to Zhang Weili and Rose Namajunas and Ioana Jędrzejczyk, that ain't bad. And of course, Valentina Shevchenko at flyweight, again, there's no shame in that. So I'm a big, I need, you got to show and prove to me. I'm big on that mindset. I need to see Lemos really impress against a veteran, which again, she was good against Hill, she wasn't great, and I think Jessica Andrade is just better than her in most areas, has the finishing power, has the big fight experience. I'll say this will go to a decision. I will say it'll go to a decision, and I think Andrade pulls one out in what I think will be a super, super exciting fight.
Jed, your thoughts? Does this fight go to the judges' scorecards?
I think Andrade runs her over. Like, I don't know. I've never been nearly as high on Lemos as everybody else has. She's also like 34, which is oddly old for any division. That's right when you're kind of hitting your athletic limit at that point. Andrade is only 30, and AK said it. She has lost to bantamweights and champions. So if Lemos wins, she's going to hold a belt. That's basically how this goes, but she's not going to. I think Andrade... I think Kaylin Jukagan is a much better fighter than Amanda Lemos, and we all saw what happened in that fight, which to me presents more troubles for her than Lemos does. I think she's going to have a big, big night Saturday.
Jose, your thoughts. Who gets it done tomorrow night in Las Vegas?
I think easy money is Jessica Andrade. I want to see how her body reacts to, like, you know, going up back and forth between, you know, flyaway, strawweight, like fighting all these, because she's fighting high level opponents, like top five opponents in pretty much two weight classes. And she keeps going back and forth. I don't like that when men do that. And I always hear it's much harder for women to cut weight and fluctuate their weight, especially in the middle of fight camp. So if she's got it down to a science, good on her. But I do want to see how her body reacts to another fight at strawweight. But the easy money is Jessica Andrade. I think everyone here already said it. She's only lost to literally the three best fighters in the world. So if you beat her, you're a top three fighter. And I just don't think Amanda Lemos is a top three fighter. Top seven, top five, maybe. Her only loss was to Leslie Smith. And that was a super short notice fight, which is why that fight was a bantamweight. Then, of course, that you saw a suspension. I think it was 2 years. I can't quite remember. But yeah, I think easy money is Jessica Andrade. I think she's just unbelievable. And I think it's only a matter of time before we see her in any bantam, in any title fight, whether it be flyweight, strawweight, even bantamweight. You never know with her.
So right now we have Jessica Andrade, a -210 favorite, the comeback on a +175. So clearly I think the risk reward scale leans in the favor of Lemos. A win obviously gives her a big boost, nice name on the resume. Andrade sort of being the hunted one once again. That being said, I'm going with Andrade. I have liked a lot what I've seen from her over the last few fights since losing the title. Zhang Weili, Valentina Shevchenko aside, and there's really no shame in this one because I don't care who you are. Nobody on planet Earth was touching Valentina Shevchenko on that night. That was one of the most dominant title defenses you will ever see. But she ended the rematch with Rose Namajunas with a lot of momentum, like Jed said. She stops Caitlin Chookagian. Yeah, something that's not easy to do. Jed thinks she won that fight against Namajunas, the rematch. And then she steamrolls Cynthia Calvillo in her last fight. I just think the experience, the explosiveness, the level of competition, and now this ability to not just go insane in the first 5 minutes of the fight and slow down the stretch. I think she's found an ability to pace herself better, to use her power, to use her athleticism in a better way for longer periods of time. And she's shown that recently she gets better as the fight goes on if it needs to get out of that first round. So all of those things factor in against a fighter like Lemos, especially in a 25-minute fight. So I'll go with Andrade to get it done. I think she gets a stoppage. And I think it's going to be kind of a torturous night for Amanda Lemos. I think Andrade is going to take her time a little bit. She's going to pick her apart. And then fourth round, I think she officially gets her out of there. I think Lemos just eventually has enough. So rest of the main card.
Hold on, Jed, why is your score? Why is your Namajunas Andrade 2 score? Why is that not on MMA Decisions?
I don't know. I actually think I scored it as a draw because I feel very confident I gave Andrade a 10-8 for the last, but I could be wrong about that.
It's MMA Decisions has 20 out of 20 outlets scored it for Rose. Jed, you could have been the one name on that list.
I'm the one name a lot on that website.
I wish you had been, and now you're, but it didn't. I don't know. It didn't register a score that day, sadly.
Support for this show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power global collaboration for all teams, so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR and legal, can stay connected and move together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. Your body is your own. That's why Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Today, lawmakers who oppose abortion are challenging Planned Parenthood. Affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. Planned Parenthood believes that healthcare is a basic human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies. They also work tirelessly to oppose the onslaught of new policies aimed at interfering with personal decisions best left to patients and their doctors. They won't give up and they won't back down. You can join Planned Parenthood in the fight to help make sure that the next generation can decide their own futures. The organization needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.
Rest of the main card, we got Clay Guida versus Claudio Puelles. By the way, if you haven't read it yet, MMAfighting.com, Sean Alshadi did a tremendous piece about Clay Guida and some of his great experiences going through the MMA world, from the regional scene to bowling alleys to Diego Sanchez and much more. Is a tremendous read. Go check that out. We got Macy Barber coming back, taking on Montana De La Rosa. We got Alexander Romanov taking on, once again, the returning Chase Sherman to the UFC. And then Charles Jourdain taking on Lando Venata to kick off the main card. You know that's going to be fun. So, Jed, what's the fight that stands out to you on this card outside of the main event? If you can only pick one in the main event on this UFC card, what are you picking?
So one outside of the main event, eh? Well, yes. The answer is very obvious to me. I mean, I could say something stupid like Mike Jackson, Dean Barry, but the actual answer is Lando Venata, Charles Jourdain. That seems like that's – if it was going to be Manel Cape, but now it's that fight. That's also a really good banger, so – though I will admit I am like oddly fascinated by Dean Barry, Mike Jackson. So, because Dean Barry is like a minus four, Dean Barry is a bigger favorite than Chris Cyborg is. He's Dean Barry, and Chris Cyborg literally has already beaten Arlene Malenko 18 months ago. And she is somehow not a bigger favorite than him. So that fight is wildly interesting to me.
AK, what's yours? What's your one other fight outside of the main event that you're picking from this card?
I mean, just spoiled. It's Dean Barry and Mike Jackson, and I'm is not it really? Even being sarcastic. I just think like I'm glad they're just doing it first fight of the card. Okay, I mean, first fight of the prelims, I say. Excuse me, first fight of the preliminary portion of the card. I mean, a lot of again, you're not worried about scaring off any like casual fans because most casual fans probably aren't tuning in to the first two, three, four fights of the ESPN's plus prelims, so that's okay. Hardcore fans kind of, I think, are aware why this fight is happening. They're certainly not like enthused about it. They're definitely just saying, isn't this the guy who beat CM Punk? Which, by the way, technically he hasn't. I mean, that result was overturned, right? Because he was smoking the weeds. So, you know, CM Punk, really, they should run that one back. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen. CM Punk currently going for the AEW world title. He's got bigger goals in mind. But yeah, I agree. Like, and it's funny when you mentioned the odds. It's not even that crazy, though, because of all the, you know, Dean Barry. Yeah, he's only got like five fights. Except that says more how lightly people are taking Mike Jackson than necessarily how lightly they're taking the Cyborg Blankov fight, right? I mean, Cyborg should be like a 20-1 favorite, but I guess there's enough respect for Blankov, and there's enough like, oh, you know, she's just a much, Blankov is a much more, you know, accomplished fighter than Mike Jackson. But it's the kind of weird, odd attraction that I don't mind the UFC opening up with. Look, hey, maybe Mike Jackson surprises us. We really didn't get to see. He didn't have to do much against CM Punk. He fought a pretty safe fight. I don't bet on MMA, as you know, but you're right. I mean, I see.
I do. And I may not have bet on him.
I don't see why you would.
Did you bet on him?
$5.
I mean, Chase Sherman are both aggressively undercosted.
these are Bellator prelim odds. This actually looks like a Bellator prelim. Dean Barry versus Mike Jackson, and the odds are certainly reflective. So yeah, I'm fascinated by again, and this also reflects, by the way, the rest of the card, which I think has like solid. There's solid matchups on it, but nothing that's from a narrative standpoint is like particularly compelling. Like Preston Parsons versus Evan Elder, it could be a great fight. I'm just not drawn to it. Dwight Grant, Sergey Kondelsko, looks like a great fight. I'm just not drawn to it. But this oddity of Dean Barry and them somehow bringing back Mike Jackson, despite like everything that has or hasn't happened over the layout since his last fight, that's really cool and weird. And I'm definitely even if I wasn't, you know, required to watch it because it's our job, I would be tuning in to see that.
Jose, what do you got? What's your on deck circle fight on this card?
I mean, I said on Between the Links yesterday, it's Tyson Page versus Ike Villanueva. Ike Villanueva literally hasn't reached the judges' scorecard in like 6 years. He's either getting just melted or he's melting someone else. And they're by no means are any of them technical. Like, it's just, I'm going to throw as hard as I can until someone dies. Or he fights someone that throws a kick punch in the middle of a UFC fight. He's 1-4 in the UFC. And we're talking about like, oh, Mike Jackson gets another shot. Like, I can't believe they're giving Ike Villanueva like a sixth fight in the UFC. Love everything about it. The man is a real life Boomhauer. And then Tyson Pedro hasn't fought in 4 years because of various injuries. And I was super high on Tyson Pedro. And then obviously he's run into some rough luck. His last fight was against Shogun in Australia pre-pandemic. So the man's been out for a minute. And also, I'm also very excited to watch fellow MMA media member Mike Jackson get another professional fight. So I'm very excited to see how the media landscape, you know. Also, oddly enough, Mike Jackson was the only one backstage that scored every round for John Jones against Dominic Reyes, which I thought was just absolutely bizarre when I was there in Houston. Yeah, so when after that fight, I was like walking around like interviewing fighters, and he's like, yeah, John Jones, 5-0. I'm like, yup. And I just like walked to the next guy. It was very, I was literally at a loss for words when he told me that. Yeah, I'm excited to see him fight. Decent card all around. A lot of funny. Like, obviously, I'm a big dork, so I'm always going to tune in for Charles Jourdain, the baddest World of Warcraft player in the UFC. Has a horde tattoo, has some dope earrings. Looks like he was going to die weighing in, even, and his fight didn't even happen against Ilia Topuria in Houston or Anaheim, and he still weighed in. So shout out to you, Charles Jourdain. You're getting another shot. So a lot of fun fights on this card. But selfishly, and it's not going to be a good fight, I'm excited for Tyson Pedro, Ike Villanueva.
I mean, I'm curious about Macy Barber, Montana De La Rosa. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see how that plays out. But if I'm choosing one, just because, you know, with everything going on this weekend, I want like an action-packed fight that's probably not going to last all that long. I'm going to go with Jordan Wright, Marc-Andre Barrio. Those two are just going to sling, catch weight 190 pounds.
It's because you're a big weeb like Jordan Wright?
I mean, they're just going to go in there and throw as hard as they can until somebody falls down. It's going to last a minute and a half. And then we're going to move on to the next thing. So it'll be a fun fight while it lasts. And I'll go with that one just to be different.
Has Jordan Wright ever reached the judges' scorecard? Because I was like trying to think of this. Like, I haven't looked it up. I don't think he's ever I don't think he's ever fought a position, win or lose.
I'm sure it's all finishes. Yeah. No.
Nope.
Nope.
Even his no contest was originally That's KO. True. So nope.
He's not even from Beverly.
He hasn't even seen a third round. He hasn't even seen a minute of round two yet, like a full minute of a second round yet in his career. So there you go.
That's a man who knows how the game works.
And he walks out. And he walks out to the 1990s version of the Berserk theme song. So, you know, he has a soft spot in my heart. I don't have to tell you about that, though.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Bellator 279, ladies. Chris Cyborg, Arlene Blanco 2, second round submission for Cyborg in their first meeting about a year and a half ago. I assume nobody is picking the upset here, so just looking at it, I'm going to play this game. We're going to play a little prop bet game between the four of us, because the closest prop betting line in terms of over-under betting line on the board right now, over-under 1.5 rounds, Jed Meshew, looks like minus money on both sides with a slight edge on the over. Do you like the over or under here? 1.5 rounds tomorrow, main event, Chris Cyborg, Arlene Blanco 2. Can Arlene Blanco get it over a round and a half?
That is it's really well set line, frankly, because it's tough to make a choice there. I'm going to say, because she like literally just made the over in their first fight by like 6 seconds, looking at it now, 6 seconds. I'm going to say the over because I think Arlene Blanco is going to now be even more cautious and she's going to really fight to survive. And so I'm going to say over, but it wouldn't at all. Like, I could totally be wrong.
AK over and under a round and a half.
Under. This time I think she's going, you know what? When am I going to be here again? Like, this is really my last shot. Probably pretty surprised. Not surprised, but, you know, getting a rematch in the first place is tough. I was surprised to see now that I was trying to, like, it felt like they've already rematched, you know, opponents for Cyborg a bunch of times. This is technically her only rematch in of someone she fought twice. Now she's now fighting for the second time in Bellator. She fought Lizzie Smith a second time, of course. Well,
they,
but I mean, that was.
They just talked about the Sinead Kavanaugh thing, but then they did this.
Oh, that was all like, right? That was crazy. That, like,
we're going to run that one immediately back. Let's just do that again.
This one is like, I mean, it's not like much more exciting, but it is makes a little more sense, at least as far as the distance. At least Cyborg has two title defenses between the, you know, the last, this one and the last Blanco fight. But yeah, I think Blanco kind of throws caution to the wind this time and says, maybe if I take it to her, you know, Amanda Nunes style, I'm going to go in there swanging and banging. Maybe I can catch her the same way and see what happens. But I mean, Cyborg's such a smart fighter that, like, you know, other than that Nunes fight, it really feels like to catch her in that way is so unlikely and so difficult. So I think if Blanco does go with that strategy, it's going to end very poorly for her. And this time she does not make it past the 230 mark of the second round.
Jose, are you on the over or the under team here?
Probably under, because you know how many submission wins Chris Cyborg has in her entire career?
One,
and it was against Arlene. So I'm assuming it will be under, because, you know, why not just put her out, put her to sleep in, I'm going to say 3 minutes and 14 seconds. That'll be my prediction. 3:14 of the first round.
Also, shouts to Cyborg for really just murdering Cyborg by TKO prop bets last time around. That has been the most safe bet in mixed martial arts gambling for 10 years, Cyborg by KO. And she pulls out the first sub of her career. I took such a bath.
I actually think this will be over. I'm going to say third round finish for Cyborg. Now,
third round.
Yeah,
so I think she makes because it. Looking at it, that's a risky. You know how many times she's finished opponents in the third round in Bellator? Zero. She's finished them in 1, 2, 4, and 5, never third.
Ooh, maybe she's going for it.
She's going to hit for the cycle, man. She's going to hit for the cycle here.
She's literally like, she's had four fights in Bellator. It's been 4, 2, 5, and 1. Her last third round stoppage win was Strike Force Miami against Marluce Cohen. So there you go, Mike. She's due.
Due for a third round finish. I love it. I love my pick even
more. Oh, no, I lied. Tanya Evinger. Tanya Evinger's third round. I forgot about that.
Oh, because I love that. I just want I want Cyborg to do the stories you hear about, like Jordan and Magic and Larry Bird, where they're just like bored during the regular season. Like, I'm going to play left-handed tonight. I just want Cyborg to do that for the rest of her career. I'm going to get a stoppage at 3 minutes and 4 seconds of the third round and just try to do that.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to honestly, there's the fight is what it is, but there's kind of a bigger story attached to this that isn't being talked about that much. Because we have to think about where Chris Cyborg will actually go from here, right? Because this is not something that she's wanted to discuss at all in the build to this fight. I know she's done interviews and she's basically said, I'm not going to talk about this. But by pretty much all accounts, come July, Chris Cyborg becomes a free agent. So, Jose, she is a big name. She's making good money in Bellator. She is winning the game of prize fighting, being in Bellator, because she's getting main event fights that are very winnable for a good chunk of change. She doesn't have to go crazy thinking about it. She's spending a lot of time in the circular cage. She may not be able to get the biggest challenges in Bellator, but she gets to fight, win, and make a lot of money. Of course, PFL could be an option with Kayla Harrison over there. Chris could compete for the $1 million next season. Do you feel like this could be her last Bellator fight tomorrow night? Or do you think she's going to be like, the grass is pretty green over here. I'm making a lot of money and I don't have to do a whole hell of a lot here. It's pretty cushy.
I think if she re-signs with Bellator, she's going to have like force Scott Coker and PFL to do some sort of cross promotion. You know, I don't think she's going to sign back with PFL to just run it back with Sinead and like all these other fighters that she's already beaten. Like Julia Budd's already hopped over to the UFC. So if she hops over there, it's just another person that she can rematch there anyway. So I think if she does re-sign with Bellator, she's going to have to force Scott Coker hands to give her either Kaz Ngannou, who for some reason she hasn't fought yet, even though they want the fight to happen, or just be like, if we re-sign, you got to get this Kayla Harrison thing sorted and we'll do a cross promotion, or I'll just go to PFL and fight her there. So I think after this fight, we'll see her fight Kayla Harrison within her next three fights. Whether it's cross promotion or just with PFL is the bigger question.
AK, you think this is it? Think this is her last Bellator fight?
If this is, yes, I think it will be. I think she is going to go do the PFL. I think it just makes a lot of sense for her. I think, again, she already is the only woman to win, you know, the world title in every major promotion. Then the PFL has sprung up. Suddenly there's another option for her. Kayla Harrison is there. My only question would be, when this happens, do they just book Harrison and Cyborg right away, or do they do the thing where they try it out over the course of the season and then, you know, just assume? And this is, and it's never safe to assume anything in tournaments and or regular seasons, you know, the whole league structure. This would be like one of the safest, if they decided to keep them apart, like for as long as they could, this would be like one of the safest bets. Both women pretty healthy, not a lot of history with injury. Just have, you know, they pretty much are known to run over everyone at 145 pounds. Or it could be, again, maybe 155. I don't know how does they decide to go with it. But either way, I do wonder though, if just to draw those immediate eyeballs, and again, just to, you know, mitigate any chance that the fight might not happen, that you just do Cyborg and Harrison right away. But yeah, I think this is it. And I think if you're Cyborg, you know, now that you're, like I said, you're getting your first, second time opponent, title challenger, you kind of have to read the tea leaves here and say like, man, I, you know, what is the next challenge for me? I'm not done yet. I'm not ready to retire yet. I'm clearly still the number one featherweight in the world. I got to make this Kayla Harrison fight happen. The idea of winning a tournament and getting $1 million, very appealing. So this will be it. This is, I think, our nice Hawaiian swan song to Chris Cyborg and Bellator.
Jed, do you agree with that?
Nope. She's coming back to Bellator. She is probably going to come back on some sort of a structured deal because PFL is about to start their season. And what AK said is like, it's totally possible that they would just be idiots, that they would sign her and be like, well, we need you to go through the tournament, or Kayla's already in the tournament, so we're going to wait till the end of it. Should be the dumbest promotional thing in the history of the world, but like right in their wheelhouse of possibility. So I think she's just going to say, all right, well, they're doing this PFL thing. Let's hope Kayla rides it out. And I'm going to go to Scott and say, hey, Scott, you like working with me. I like working with you. I still want to fight Kat Zingano. Not really sure what the hell's going on here and why that's not. I will sign a 7-month contract with you with no champions clause stips on it, and I will fight once, maybe twice, before I go to the PFL. And in that gives you 7 months to get your ducks in a row and figure out co-promotion with him, because either way I'm going, because that's the fight I want, it's the fight I need, I'm going to go get that by hook or by crook. And then that puts the onus on him to get off his ass and do whatever the hell he didn't do when Kayla Harrison was a free agent. So I think she's coming back because the timing doesn't really seem like it fits to me, but I think she's coming back with a lot of caveats attached to her return.
I think this is a question we're going to be revisiting in the next 2 or 3 months, because if her contract expires in July and she goes out there and beats Arlene pretty emphatically and doesn't take a lot of damage and is healthy coming out of it, maybe Kat Zingano is in Hawaii. Maybe we'll see that little face off and they try to squeeze one more in before we get to that place.
Wouldn't it be the most MMA thing in the world for Arlene Blanco to win this fight though? Like, it's a rematch. She should obviously lose. We've literally already seen it. There's so much tied up into the future of Kayla and Cyborg, and this just be the weird bolt of lightning that shakes up everything. That feels fitting.
This would,
maybe we're in for it.
This would surpass. No, I always, oh, no, no, sure. This would, this, this, no, 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 this upset would surpass. I have held on to this upset for forever now, that nothing will ever pass Sarah and GSP. I think Blanco beating Cyborg would be a bigger upset.
Yep.
Yeah.
That'd be an absolute stunner, no doubt about it. So that's the main event. We'll see what happens with Chris Cyborg. Jed, back to you. We have the kickoff of the Bantamweight Grand Prix on this card. Kyoji Horiguchi versus Patchy Mix, 5 rounds. Co-main event slot, we got Rafion Stotts taking on Juan Archuleta for the interim Bantamweight title. Let's take the title off the table. We know how you feel about this whole situation because it is kind of silly. But, you know, if it makes fighters more money along the way, cool. Which fight on an island do you like more? Take the title and all that out of it. Which of these two fights do you like more? Horiguchi Mix or Stotts Archuleta?
That's really good. I think Horiguchi Mix is probably going to be more fun, so I'll say that. I think both of these fights rule. Between the four men competing, they have a combined like 3 career losses or some absurdly low number. But I think Kyoji's the best Japanese fighter ever. He's one of the most fun dudes to watch compete. Patchy Mix has been talking of, to steal Jose's term, talking a lot of greasiness coming into this one, and almost certainly can't back it up, especially over 5 rounds. So that fight is probably going to be really fun. Whereas Rafion Stotts and Juan Archuleta could look a lot like Patch, like the early goings of Mix Archuleta, which is like a fun scrap, but also like, I don't know, Stotts might just tackle him a bunch and it might not be nearly as exciting as watch Kyoji do Kyoji things.
AK, I feel like Juan Archuleta might be the most overlooked fighter of the entire weekend. Betting lines, nearly a 2-1 underdog. It does not seem like there is a single person that is out there that is picking Juan Archuleta to win this fight. Are you surprised by this, or is this just everyone just hopping on the Stotts bandwagon? I feel like people should have hopped on a couple of years ago, but I feel like Archuleta is not getting really any respect heading into tomorrow.
I actually reacted quite viscerally. Mike, can you say that again, and I'll repeat my facial reaction that whole about Archuleta.
I feel like Juan Archuleta might be the most overlooked fighter of the weekend.
It was a little more organic before, but yes, that surprised me. I did not know he was a 2-1 underdog. I was about to go on a whole bit about him being overlooked, but I didn't think it was by that much. I get it. Rafion Stotts, really good, glossy record. People love that 17-1. It looks real nice. He's got the right training background, you know, with the iron sharpens iron, all that cool name. And you know, there's that element of, we've discussed all the way in the show, kind of freshness. People like to see fresh names. People want to see fresh names get that shot of the title. They want to see new champions. They want to see, you know, new names advance in this tournament. But yeah, Archuleta for sure. Like, I think people like Archuleta Mix was a really good fight, and it's one that, like, I feel like some people have forgotten. We always talk about on all of our shows how amazing the bantamweight division is, and often we're talking about the UFC, but we're absolutely including so many of the Bellator bantamweight, Sergio Pettis, Kyoji Horiguchi, Archuleta Mix, Rafion Stotts. He's definitely being overlooked. Archuleta is just a super talent, super well-rounded guy. He was competitive in 2 divisions. I was picking him to win. I did not know that he was such a, like, 2-1 is really, it surprised me. If you told me like it was like maybe a -150 for Stotts, I would have understood. But I think Archuleta is, you know, he's fought the better competition. He's got that experience. I think 5 rounds, I'm not saying either guy has a questionable gas tank at all. I just favor Archuleta to be able to kind of make the adjustments and pull away if he does fall behind. Jed said, like, it could look a little bit like the Patchy Mix fight. I think that's a pretty accurate breakdown. So again, I don't bet on MMA, but if you were to, you know, fancy yourself a parlay, you could do a lot worse than throwing an Archuleta win in there.
In the last 45
don't
minutes,
parlay underdogs.
No, in the last 45 minutes, Archuleta went from a plus 195 underdog to a plus 215 underdog. So more money coming in on Mr. Superstats, according to our friends at DraftKings. So Jose, which one of these Grand Prix fights are you more interested in on Saturday?
It's Kyoji Horiguchi, because like I said on Between the Links, a lot of people on this site in particular at one point thought Kyoji Horiguchi was the best bantamweight in the world. I was not in that camp, but a lot of people thought it was, and he was well on his way to beating Sergio Pettis before he just got clipped by a very crazy spinning back elbow in one of the best knockouts you'll see all year. Even Sergio Pettis himself was very upset with his win because he was about to lose. So I'm excited to see how he bounces back, because a lot of people still, like I said, consider him the best bantamweight in the world. If he had beaten Sergio Pettis, we probably would have been talking about him in this fight like we were talking about AJ McKee before his last fight. Like, does Bellator have the best featherweight? Does Bellator have the best bantamweight? The answer is no, but the fact that we're having that conversation makes it that much more interesting. Patchy Mix is pretty much beaten almost all these high level bantamweights outside of Juan Archuleta. I think his record, he hasn't beaten a lot of recognizable names, but he's beating them the way you're supposed to beat fighters like that. It's just, he's obviously coming off the big win over Gallagher, which I'm not super high on James Gallagher, but a lot of people tune in to watch him fight. So I'm sure Patchy Mix got, for whatever this means in Bellator, more fans than Juan Archuleta, and his real stupid gimmick of being a Mexican man walking out in a conquistador helmet fighting Rufián Stotts. I don't know who's going to win that fight, but I am almost guaranteeing it's going to go five rounds, because what do they have, like 20-something decisions between the two? They're both very high-level fighters, and they both dominate their opponents when they do win, but they don't really put their opponents away a whole lot. So I expect I'm going to pick Juan Archuleta to win. Who's he lost to? Sergio Pettis and Patricio Pitbull? Two very high-level names. We just talked a whole lot about who's Jessica Andrade's lost to. Literally the best. That's all Juan Archuleta's lost to. If Rufián Stotts wins, you'd have to consider him one of the favorites in this Grand Prix, then, considering the only people that have beaten Juan Archuleta. But I'm going to pick Juan Archuleta and his stupid conquistador Mexican gimmick.
All right, Jed, who's moving on in this Grand Prix? Are we rolling with two favorites? Could we see an underdog play spoiler here, an Archuleta and Mix? What do you think?
Nah, baby, this is Bellator. Always go with the chalk. When I first looked at the Stotts fight, I thought that, oh, that seems like Archuleta should not be that big an underdog. And I watched the tape, was like, oh, no, that's right. Like, Stotts is just going to tackle him a bunch, and he's not going to be able to stop it. And he's probably not going to blow his gas like Patchy Mix did in their fight. So give me the chalk, baby. Kyoji, I think Kyoji's the favorite in the tournament. And Stotts is probably my second favorite in the tournament, what with old Pettis out of action now. So also, it was really weird that Archuleta wasn't going to be in this tournament. Is that right? Was he just not going to be in the Grand Prix? That seems weird. But yeah, now I'm go all chalk, baby, down the line.
AK.
Mike, you just asked. Oh, sorry, I blacked out there for a second. I was looking at odds. Where are the Bellator? I was looking at Jed's gambling article. I apologize. I wasn't paying attention to the show. I couldn't find odds for Blencow and Cyborg. What are they, Jed?
Minus 900 for Cyborg, plus 600 for Blencow.
Yep. Only minus 900.
But I know,
high,
right?
It depends where isn't you look. She's as high. Cyborg's as high as a minus 1400, though. She's as high as a minus 1400, depending on where you look. But DraftKings, the best sports book on the planet, minus 900.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Mike. What was the question you were putting
to me? I might be destitute.
Mike, I'm sorry. What was the question?
The Grand Prix matchups. Who wins?
Oh, okay. Well, like I said, I like Archuleta. And I'm going to go with Horiguchi. I'm going with Horiguchi. There was a part of me that was like, you know, Patchy's almost like in the same boat as Juan Archuleta. I feel like, you know, he lost that one fight, and I don't know if that took a lot of the, you know, he lost that undefeated mystique. But I also think, again, Kyoji was beating Sergio Pettis. I mean, he was clearly winning that fight. He's clearly the superior fighter. Has to be one of the three or four best bantamweights in the world. My rankings might not reflect that. I'm gonna have to take another look at them. I'm one of the people who was skeptical, and oddly, after that performance, even though he lost, I kind of felt compelled to move him up and kind of listen to what some of our other MMA fighting panelists had to say about Kyoji. But this is a legitimate test for him. This is a legitimate test, and an upset would not surprise me. But Jed is right. Chalk is the way to go. Kyoji, I don't think he's getting caught by anything like that from Patchy Mix, and I think he wins a pretty clear-cut decision.
All right. Jose, you're going Archuleta and Horiguchi. That where you're going with?
Correct. Horiguchi, okay. Who a lot, like I said, could be the best banner in the world, and Archuleta.
The first like 9 minutes of that fight, the Mix Horiguchi fight is going to be interesting because Mix is a big dude. I mean, they're going to weigh in today, so we'll see if Patchy Mix even makes the weight because he missed it in his last fight. And Mix is a big guy. He's probably going to gas down the stretch, but those first like 8-9 minutes are going to be really interesting. But I'm with Horiguchi, and I'll go. I think Archuleta is being completely overlooked here. I will go Stotts, but this has like BS split decision written Ooh. All over it. Like this. This is one of those like controversial decisions written all over it. So
Mike, we'll stirring the pot before the fight hasn't even happened yet. You're already stirring the pot.
I mean, it would be such a Bellator thing to have that happen. So that's the Bellator 279 card. Of course, Bellator 278 is going down tonight. You can check that out.
This week on The Pitch, it's tween time.
We're redefining feminine hygiene for tweens.
You've done 5 million sales. You did 3 million last year. Very impressive.
Thank you.
I really believe in this category. I'm an investor in a company called AmpFloat.
And similarly, I'm a personal investor in Ruby Love.
Like Elizabeth and Charles, I have seen a lot of these companies. Mm-hmm. I've never made an investment in the space. You should be raising more than $500,000.
As a Black woman, for me to come on here and say, I'm going to become the new Always, that's super audacious. And I could we for sure.
What makes it audacious?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
Told us what you wanted. That's what I wanted to hear.
I get the sense back her experience might have been a little different.
Save the mic.
That looked really expensive.
This week on The Pitch, Monica Williams drops the mic. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch wherever you listen to podcasts.
But before all those festivities happen, Jose, I know you've been waiting for this moment. Tyson Fury, Dillian White are going to get in the squared circle, mm-hmm. and they're going to throw those heavyweight hands at each other. This is a very interesting matchup. Supposedly, quote unquote, the retirement fight for Tyson Fury. We don't know if that's actually going to be the case or not. It is combat sports and money talks. Tyson Fury has the chance to make just a ton more of it. There's a lot of money to be left on the table here. But a lot of people just look at this fight and they think Tyson Fury is just going to go in there. He's going to dance around. He's going to sing some songs. He's going to knock Dillian White into next week. And then he's going to sing some more songs in the microphone, say he's retired, and just walk away. Just walk back down the aisle in front of 90,000 people at Wembley Stadium. Do you think it's that simple?
No, hell no. Dillian White is so good at fist fighting human beings. He's just the fourth at its peak of the last 10 years, Dillian White was like the fourth best heavyweight in the world. When Andy Ruiz beat Anthony Joshua, I still thought, because I wanted Dillian White, Joshua to rematch in New York that night, or to have Dillian White fight Andy Ruiz. Those are the fights like I wanted. Dillian White has just been severely overlooked by the masses simply because his name was not Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua, and Tyson Fury. Let's not forget, Tyson Fury's win over Klitschko is awful. That fight is terrible. Like, historic. Also, like, historic win, and then he lost his mind and vacated the belts and like took like 6 years off, and then Klitschko had that absolute banger of a fight against Anthony Joshua that I think people have just severely forgotten about in terms of like great heavyweight fights the last 5 years. Dillian White is so good, and he has not fought in Deontay Wilder three times in the last 2 years, which is a lot of damage on the human body. I don't know if you've heard this. Deontay Wilder is probably the hardest puncher in the history of boxing, more than Mike Tyson. There's literally a gif of Deontay Wilder punching Tyson Fury in the head, and there is a ripple effect going down Tyson Fury's entire body. You can't do that three times to be the same man. Tyson Fury, of course, is not as controversial heading into this fight, I think, because there are outside questions about his management group or people that he's been tied to. So he's trying to, you know, not cast a big spotlight on him. Dillian White is so good at fighting. And if he wins, we're not going to call it an upset. We're just going to run it back between two high-level boxers. If the number four heavyweight beats the number one heavyweight, It's not an upset. He's just better that night. And then if he does win, Tyson Fury's not retiring. He might vacate the belt to take on money fights like Francis Ngannou or this or that because he doesn't want to be tied into like mandatory fights. But if I'm any of these people, if Anthony Joshua wins and Tyson Fury wins, make that fight because that's the biggest fight outside of Conor McGregor fighting Canelo, which will never happen. The biggest fight you can make in all of combat sports is Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua. You put all the belts on the line to become the first unified heavyweight champion since Lennox Lewis. It'll sell that much. Now, if Tyson Fury wins and Anthony Joshua loses, Tyson Fury is not going to want to fight Alexander Usyk. He's just going to vacate the belt and he'll go fight Anthony Joshua for no belt and will still make a ton of money. So don't say boxing is dead because the heavyweight division right now is fan-freaking-tastic. And Tyson Fury is awesome. Dillian White's awesome. And I'm very excited for Saturday.
Jed, this seems like your kind of heavyweight title fight right here because you got Tyson Fury, he's just full of personality, and then you have Dillian White, who, as you like to put it when speaking of some of these UFC fighters, he's a get or get got kind of guy. He just get goes in got, there and baby. Just get or get got. He just gets in there and he throws as hard as he can. He's very effective. He can knock dudes out. He's got power. But he just goes in there and he gets after it, and he's either going to knock a dude out or he's going to get knocked out. That's probably how I don't think this fight goes to the decision. I think someone's going to sleep. It just depends. I think it's going to be kind of late. Maybe the 10th round this fight ends, but this seems like right in your wheelhouse for heavyweight boxing.
Do you love Dillian White? Because this is a man who knows what combat sports are about. It's about just do a thing violently, really hard for like 10 minutes max. Because that's what we want to see. High-level MMA and Jose can, you know, like all his elite fighters fighting 25-minute tactical battles. Give me two dudes just chucking them. Chucking mitts until one of them falls down. I will always be here for this. I'll watch it every weekend. And, yeah, I think Dillian White is probably going to come chuck mitts. And he's going to get knocked out. It's going to be great. It's going to be really, really fun.
AK, did you know that Tommy Fury is fighting on this card? Because I didn't know until yesterday, and the fight's tomorrow.
I didn't know Tyson Fury was fighting until he told me. I knew Tommy Fury was fighting. That's what's weird. I was like, why do you guys keep saying Tyson? And then I'm like, oh, I was just looking at I went to Wikipedia, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, Tommy Fury fighting Daniel Bochanski. I'm assuming not a world title contender, but that's fine. Listen, we're all, I think, I shouldn't say all. There's some people who didn't care for the matchup at all. But those of us who are, you know, sort of enjoying the Jake Paul, you know, freak show fight experience, Tommy Fury was such a logical opponent. Both people wanted it. I believe that I think anyone accusing Tommy Fury of pulling out of the fight, like faking it, is insane. Why would he do that? He's probably, you know, has a good chance of being Jake Paul. He probably lost a lot of money. Especially if that fight never materializes again. So I believe all the stuff about whatever illness, chest pains, all that stuff is kind of happening. Because I do think it would have taken a lot happening to Tommy Fury for him to not want to do that fight. Win or lose. Even if he ended up losing, he would have made a lot of money. So instead, kind of nice. He ends up on the undercard of Tyson. That's always fun. Again, could be Tyson's last fight. All you guys don't necessarily think that. But maybe his last time, as a regular sort of normal boxer, whatever that means, defending his world title and what have you. So Tommy Fury, that's a fun one. Main event, I'm a Tyson Fury's probably gonna stay undefeated guy. I just think he's got that weird style. Yeah, three fights with Deontay Wilder, I tell you, not good for you. Definitely not good for you. I know Jose is not a doctor, but I do trust his medical diagnosis here. Win or lose, boy, going however many rounds those guys went, you just can't be the safe person. But I do think there is enough of Tyson Fury left. What a horrible thing to say about a fighter. I do think there's enough left in the gas tank, as it were, and health-wise and skill-wise and his faculties and everything that, I think he takes care of business. And I think we'll see a late finish. So I'm going Fury, remains undefeated. And I do think the retirement is real, only because I'm skeptical that those sort of fights we want to see with Ngannou and stuff happen. I hope they happen. I think they'd be really cool if they did. I definitely would want to see the Joshua fight before it's all said and done. But I do think there's a chance. Fury is such a unique character. I do think there's a chance that this could be it.
You guys are just forgetting an important thing, which is Deontay Wilder already killed him. And he rose from the dead. And you cannot kill a dead
guess
man.
What? Even Jesus only did that once. Can't do it again.
Oh, controversial. Every year.
Wow. Nice. Man, I wish we did this on Easter.
I know the timing.
Daniel Bonchansky, the guy that Tommy Fury's fighting to, is actually like a legitimate test. He's not going to be a champion, but like all the flack that it gave Tommy Fury's previous opponents, like if you look at the records of all his previous opponents, it is like historically awful. But Daniel Bonchansky, I think, is like 10-1, 9-1, and he actually does have a lot of decision wins, which means he has a lot of ring time. This is, a legitimate test. I wish it was longer. I think it's 6 rounds, maybe 8. I wish it was like a full 10. But I think this is an actual decent step up for a fighter of Tommy Fury's level, like at this point in his career. Like, I think Jake Paul gets him way more money. I don't know if Daniel Bonchansky is better than Jake Paul, but I don't hate this matchup.
All right. Well, let's go to the peeps. We'll take a couple of peeps questions because, by the way, we will be back tomorrow. I think around 5:30 Eastern to react to Tyson Fury's potential win or maybe Dillian White's big win, non-upset, mm-hmm. according to Jose non-upset. Youngs.
No.
And then we'll take your questions heading into the UFC and Bellator card. So.
Can we talk about polls a little bit too? I don't know if you guys noticed in the chat, polls have been springing up left and right. People have just been taking them. And if you want to know how that went, I can tell you right now.
Results.
All right, we got some poll results. Most anticipated event, Fury versus White. It was UFC was the early leader. Fury versus White pulled ahead. 43%, not as overwhelming as I would think, though this is mostly an MMA fighting audience, so let's keep that in mind. But 43% Fury White, Vegas 52 second at 33%. Over under Blankow, 1.5 rounds, over by quite a large margin, 66%, excuse me, 2 out of 3 think that she does it again. Maybe because they saw it and they're like, why can't she do that again?
Or, or maybe they think Blanco's winning. We just don't
that
know
too. That. Yeah. I mean, I would count that also as going over. Yeah. Blankow win.
I don't and, think Blankow's winning early.
Ongoing. Will this be Tyson Fury's last fight? Yes. Not very strong. So 64% for no. Most people thinking that. I think kind of what you guys are thinking. He's going to find a way to get more fights and make more money outside of the confines of the standard boxing structure.
Wait, if Blankow wins, you don't think it won't be early? You think she can draw out a decision victory over Cyborg?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
What?
She's going to just outpoint Chris Cyborg.
Well, you said if Blankow wins, she's not going to win early.
Oh, it was a joke, Casey. Just making a joke.
I didn't hear anyone laughing, so I wasn't sure.
You know, a lot of my jokes are that way, Casey. Okay. I laugh, and that's what matters to me.
All right, what do we got here?
Oops, too small.
Take a few.
Do.
We did talk about this. It's one of our highly anticipated matchups. The huge return of Mike Jackson this week. I'm pretty sure Dana said he's never fighting in the UFC again after he whooped CM Punk. I mean, welcome back, Mike Jackson. Mm-hmm. My big question is,
no contest.
Will Mike Jackson fight and then ask questions in the back like he did the last time he fought? Two times ago.
He's the first fight of the night. First fight of the night.
Mickey Gall. After the Mickey Gall fight, he was asking. I think he asked questions to Mickey Gall.
He did.
If memory serves it correctly. Yeah.
So we'll
love that both of those men are still in the organization, and CM Punk is not anywhere close to it.
CM Punk's doing.
Hey,
doing.
Real he's doing shit. Better. He's had a corkover match with. He had a corkover match with Dustin Rhodes on AEW this week. So people, check that one out. Great, great match.
And Mike Jackson, I guess he would be the first UFC fighter ever to fight twice in the UFC and have no victories.
Well, this will be 3 times.
So his third time? He fought.
He lost to Mickey Gall.
Oh,
and then CM Punk was overturned.
Okay, his third fight in the UFC with 0 victories. Go, Mike Jackson.
Seth Petruzzelli would be in there.
No. Petruzzelli has victories.
Not in the UFC. Does Mike Jackson have no victories?
No victories
at all. Oh, yeah. In MMA. Oh, okay.
MMA.
Oh,
yeah. The golf fight was his pro. It was his MMA pro debut.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Just want to say a little love for Jed. We're getting there's a lot of Jed love in the comments. So
okay,
something's going on.
I love you
on.
Too, people.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea. Love you all.
Did we even talk about this fight?
Nope. Sure didn't. We disrespected the hell out of Liz Carmouche.
Did
Bellator 278 make the marquee of the preview show? No, because by the time a lot of people listen to this, either the fight card will be going on or it'll be over. Some people might be listening tomorrow for the first time. So we just want to make sure.
Yeah, people listening right
but
now.
But yes, we can talk briefly about it. AK, will Liz Carmouche end the night Bellator champion?
Well, listen, for those of you listening a day after, man, I can't believe it. Carmouche has finally won a world title. There it is. I mean, I think a lot of us thought she was the uncrowned champion when she went over to Bellator. If people could see our internal, I didn't see our internal rankings. I believe in our overall rankings consensus. I think we have her ahead of Juliana Velasquez. And why shouldn't she be? Why shouldn't she be? She's beaten a lot of great flyweights. Juliana Velasquez, respectfully, very good champion in Bellator, but I don't know if she's shown anything to me that she's like been so impressive that she necessarily takes Liz Carmouche's spot just because Liz Carmouche is not wearing a title around her waist. So yeah, I have her ahead of Juliana Velasquez. I know a lot of people do, and I think she just makes it a formality. Juliana Velasquez's last fight with Denise Kielholz, probably just a bad style matchup. Like, I don't want to say that I'm exposed or anything. I think Denise Kielholz is a really good fighter, and it was a stand-up fight, and that's how it had to go. So maybe it's a credit to Velasquez that she got that decision, though there were some shaky moments. So maybe she's better for it, but I just think Carmouche, like I said, has been one of the toughest outs at 125 and 135 before that. Has twice fought for UFC titles against Valentina Shevchenko, Ronda Rousey. And I think that I wouldn't put Juliana Velasquez on that level. So I think Liz Carmouche finally gets it done and gets gold around her waist. Or should I say, excuse me, already has it around her waist for those of you listening on a Saturday.
Has Liz fought? Did she ever fight Jessica Andrade? Is that a fight that ever happened?
No. Okay. No.
Nope. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think that was Jessica Andrade's like first fight in the UFC.
Oh, I see it now.
It had.
Oh, Liz won. Oh, Liz won.
Carmouche fight. So that was
135.
That would have been one of those first
fights. That was pre-flight.
There you go. That's a good win. That's a good win.
I think that was the first fight between two openly gay fighters in UFC history.
I'm pretty sure
you're
right. Covered that fight. I was there. You're right. I actually remember both of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me of that. So just want to give Liz Carmouche a little love. Obviously, Shevchenko is Shevchenko, but I believe Liz Carmouche is the second best flyweight in the world, and I think she's gonna, win big in a few hours.
You mean she's already proven it? For those listening now,
yeah. All right,
we shall see. We shall see. Nick M. Can Cyborg retain her throne as women's best?
Regain.
Excuse me.
Regain.
All right, that's a no. I think.
Is there anything she can do without ever rematching Amanda Nunes?
No. Not in the eyes of fans.
I think smoking Kayla Harrison in like 20 seconds would make people think about it.
She blows the doors off Kayla Harrison and Shevchenko loses, then okay, but Shevchenko ain't losing, so no.
Yeah, other stuff Shevchenko, probably has to happen.
Shevchenko.
Right. Shevchenko has to lose for her to get that title.
If Amanda goes out there and just destroys Juliana in the rematch, then I'm sure she would probably claim the one or two spot in the eyes of fans as well.
I think it's Shevchenko. Yeah, until Shevchenko loses, I agree with you guys.
Agree.
So forever, she will have.
Or if like for all we know, like if we're being honest, like Rose is probably fighting the higher competition in terms of like skill set compared to Rose versus her opponent. If Rose just goes on a tear and like gets like five title defenses, like how can you not put her up there? Because five title defenses at strawweight is a lot harder than five title defenses at any other weight class in women's weight class.
Good point. Yeah, if she goes out, if she beats Carla and then beats Andrade and then beats Joanna,
that's a long.
She's already beat. She's already beat Joanna twice. I don't think that fight's gonna happen again anytime soon.
Yeah. She gotta get by Carla first. Let's talk about this gentleman.
Joseph Boza, what are your thoughts on the 10-day span that Chase Sherman had? April 12th, finds out the UFC cut him again, ending his second stint. Then a week later, he's brought back again to fight this week. And from my understand, he's making a few more bucks, doubled his pay from his most recent run in the UFC. And now he's back, and his gift, his prize, is taking on a now slender, more ripped up Alexander Romanov. Have you seen the side-by-side from the last two fights? Romanov looking shredded right now.
He's got like a little big four-pack.
Four and a half pack.
Yeah, four and a half pack. I like it.
Yes, Romanov looking good. One of the up-and-coming heavyweights, a guy a lot of people are very high on. And he gets to fight on Saturday. He gets to do so against Chase Sherman. So, Jed, your thoughts on Chase Sherman's once again return to the Ultimate Fighting Championship in this matchup against Alexander Romanov?
Proves a couple things. One, the best ability is availability, man. Chase Sherman just said yes. And that's why he has a job right now. And look, he's probably going to lose. But also, he might not. Like, I think I'm maybe the highest on Romanov out of the people here. I certainly am ranked the highest, I'm pretty sure. But, like, for the many flaws that Chase Sherman has in his game, he's pretty good at not being taken down. Like, he doesn't give up a lot of takedowns historically. And he can maybe just do that thing where he throws a lot and somehow can't really knock people out at heavyweight, which is it's a big problem if you're a heavyweight striker and you're not like a big hitter, that's trouble. But like if he can just stay on his feet and he's coming in on short notice, Romanov not going to have enough time to game plan for him. This is the textbook definition of having nothing to lose. He has nothing to lose here. And as we all know from watching The Replacements and that inspiring speech from Gene Hackman, that makes you all very dangerous people. And I'm just saying, Chase Sherman, he might not lose this. And boy, would that be something.
Wow.
Jed, you are correct. You definitely have Romanov ranked the highest. I'm also on the Romanov train, but unfortunately, he just hasn't had the right competition across the cage for me to justify it. But I know you're just like, yeah, F it.
We do our things differently.
Yeah, we do our things differently. But you know, I'm just waiting for Romanov to, he just needs a better competition. And but
is beating Chase Sherman going to be that better competition for you, Casey? Yeah,
no, because Chase Sherman is going to lose.
Yeah, Tanner Boser would have been kind of an interesting one. But listen, I honestly think that if the Juan Espino fight actually went the distance and didn't end in the weird way that it ended, I think people would look at Romanov a little bit higher than they did. But people haven't forgotten about that, and they thought it was a little weird, that whole Espino situation and the tech decision and stuff.
Also, just because it should be noted, bravo to this, because it's the Vanilla Gorilla versus King Kong. And that's A-plus work, Sean Shelby. Like, that is A-plus stuff in my book.
This doesn't go past the two-minute mark, and I hope Sherman, wow, though, he doesn't go no. And then I hope that Sherman ends up on a Sam Alvey like run for the next two. I'll be somehow.
He's a heavyweight. Like, she's a heavyweight. Sam Alvey.
Just like two more fights, just so we six straight losses, but he's hanging in there. He's getting paychecks. Maybe there's a fight in the night in there. Fight of the night in there somewhere. I know it's been a while since he got one. That would just be great. I think Chase Sherman is beyond wins and losses at this point. He's winning. Him coming back and pulling off the sequence of events that Joseph Bosa just described, he's a winner no matter what. He's a winner.
All right. Okay, so according to this, the closest over-under line on this fight is 1.5 rounds, -270. It does not go over. It goes under 1.5 rounds, +205, over 1.5 rounds. Fight goes to a decision, -650. It does not, +425. It does. So there you go. Some interesting lines. Chase Sherman wins by KO, +1400. Chase Sherman winning by decision. Where is that? By
decision. Jed, I saw your eyes lift a little bit when you heard that.
+1800. Chase Sherman by decision, +1800.
I saw Jed react.
I have recommended parlaying Chase Sherman and Mike Jackson together in the long shot of the week this week. So, you know, that's where I'm at this weekend.
Real quick, talk about the odds for Mike Jackson. Yeah.
Joseph Bosa, we did talk about this.
Oh yeah, I know. I wasn't gonna bring that up, but we're talking about odds. Yeah, so
we're just telling Joseph Bosa. Yeah. Though maybe this was asked, but maybe this was asked before we.
And
before
we started talking. Last comment before we head out.
I actually think Dean Barry might have more pressure on him this weekend than like anybody else to deliver with these odds. Like, he's brought in to have a showcase performance, and if he goes out and loses to Mike Jackson, my word. Like, and you're going to see an article that Damon Martin wrote. I think it's going to drop sometime tomorrow. Yeah, pressure's on. on Dean Barry. And happy birthday, AK. You never like his tweet replies.
Comment. Happy our birthday, pal Davis AK. Dean. Yeah, take that. Take that. First of all, one, it's not my birthday. Two, David, take that as a message. That's wow. all I'm going to say.
Wow.
That is.
AK, you
or maybe, you know what? Wow. I think the message is already. Wow. I think the message has already been received. So I don't think anything more needs to be said.
Hit the music.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Prince of Positivity with the flamethrower.
Damn.
And this multifaceted live preview show here on MMAfighting.com. I mean, believe all you want, AK, but there will be no basketball in about a week in Toronto. We'll just put it that way. So, all right, but there will be MMA and there will be boxing tomorrow, and there'll be some MMA tonight. So enjoy all the festivities. We'll be back tomorrow to get you caught up on everything, to preview all that stuff. For Jose, for Jed, for AK, for EKC Lydon on the ones and twos, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Love you guys.
We the North. We the North. That's our motto.
Happy birthday, AK.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this podcast comes from Planned Parenthood. It's hard to imagine a world where we leave future generations with fewer rights and freedoms. Since the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills aimed at blocking people from getting the essential sexual and reproductive care they need, including abortion. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves access to care. And with supporters like you, they can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future to learn more and support their cause.